Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 3rd of September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Wyatt Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. And we're delighted to have David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives with us. Mike, we go on holiday for a couple of weeks, and what are we seeing? A drive to war?
Absolutely, a drive to war. I can just say before we start, Brian, it seems like the studio is working. It's quite incredible. We've been away for 2 weeks. Usually, with first day back, it is a technical disaster, but something's wrong.
Sometimes you have to win.
Yes. Okay, well, let's talk about war then, because Theresa May has been over in Somalia meeting, well, they were tweeting this out today. Theresa May meets British troops working in Somalia and gives strong and positive support for their efforts in both developing security forces and working with international partners to bring stability to Somalia. Well, that's wonderful. So the press release that went along with this was even better. It said the international community must do more to help the African Union lead the fight against Al-Shabaab in Somalia, and that's taking on greater responsibility for its own security. And she's saying that the UK has a strong track record both in supporting the African Union and in helping Somalia rebuild its police and military forces after decades of insecurity. She said that a UK-backed counter-IED training centre is being opened in Nairobi, and she will see troops helping prepare soldiers from Kenya and the region deploy as part of the African Union mission in Somalia. So it's a bit unfortunate, perhaps, that another huge explosion in Mogadishu, reported by the BBC today, a number of people killed in that. That's all a bit unfortunate, but they're going to get £7 million of new funding to support the African Union's peacekeeping mission, and that's on top of £385 million contributed last year towards international efforts to help the Somali people build an increasingly secure, stable and prosperous country. Of course, we've got to remember that Theresa May hosted the Somali conference, London Somali conference in the middle of last year. So we're really behind the Somalis. Now, why would that be? Why would we be interested in, in fact, are we supporting stability, or are we in fact putting money in similar to Syria in order to destabilize the country? Well, that is the question.
I don't think it's the question, Mike. That's what we're doing.
Well,
it's destabilize Somalia to bring Somalia under full control by the European Union, effectively.
Well, let's see, because China has said that they intend to support development in Somalia. Of course, China doing a lot in Africa, attempting to develop Africa, making lots of loans, but not on the sort of the style of loans that the IMF World Bank have made in the past, China claiming at least that they intend to help maintain independence and sovereignty in these countries as these countries are developed. Don't think Britain wants to see too much of that, but maybe this gives us a clue as well, because just a few days ago Penny Mordaunt was crowing about the new financial technology as the City of London moves into the African Union countries, including Somalia. But this particular press release was about Nigeria, these exciting new African listings on the London Stock Exchange and the first UK-Africa fintech partnerships are indicative of the city's position as the world's leading financial centre. So they're saying that they are going to support economic growth in Africa by offering City of London expertise. So what could possibly go wrong there? What do they mean by City of London expertise? I think we know what that means: more rape and pillage of these countries, and of course Britain and the West not doing things with a view to maintaining sovereignty. That's what we're doing.
Perhaps David would like to comment on that.
Yeah, I would. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mike. Great to be back on the news with you guys. Well, what's in the frame down there in Somalia? Well, we've got EU NAVFOR, EU Navy, and Operation Atalanta, and Oceans Beyond Piracy, and all these sorts of groups. And all that's being run out of joint headquarters RN Northwood. So there's a lot of stuff going on down there in Somalia, not least of it is EU Navy. So all that's got to really be taken as a whole, and this whole sort of sprat to catch a mackerel syndrome that's being developed out of it, surely the general public are seeing through it all now. Well, at least I hope so.
Well, I think they're starting to. We'll be coming on a little bit later to EU NAV4 and those operations off Somalia.
So let's move on to Syria then. And a couple of days ago, the Telegraph reporting that Russia is massing warships off Syria ahead of regime's final assault in Idlib. They're saying at least 10 Russian warships, 2 submarines have been deployed to the Eastern Mediterranean, the largest naval buildup since Moscow's intervention in Syria began in 2015. And that's according to Russian media. Most of the Russian warships are armed with long-range caliber missiles, which could be used to attack ground targets in support of an Assad regime assault on Idlib. Now, Britain in particular are getting very concerned about this final assault in Syria on Idlib, because, of course, this is where all the British-funded terrorists have been gathering since all the other parts of Syria have been cleansed of their influence by the Syrian army. And of course, Syria getting support from Russia on this, and Lavrov making a comment on this today, the Russian foreign minister, saying there is no place for terrorists in Syria and the Syrian government has every right to seek their liquidation on its territory. Now, Brian, it seems to me that there is a fairly major risk that the West, if I'm hearing what Western and particularly British politicians are saying about this potential, and if you look at the mainstream media coverage of the potential for what they're describing to be a bloodbath in Idlib, clearly the West very concerned that their tame terrorists are at risk as a result of Syrian actions, Syrian army actions in Idlib. And they want to protect them. So I'm hearing calls from people suggesting that we should intervene if the Syrian government attempts to cleanse Idlib of the terrorist factions there. And bearing in mind what Russia's doing in the Eastern Mediterranean, this must be a pretty dangerous position that's being developed here.
I think it's immensely dangerous, Mike. And on my other screen here, I've got a Guardian article. Russia softens up the West for bloodbath it's planning in Syria's Idlib province. So the whole Western propaganda machine is now absolutely focused on if the Russians continue to fight terrorism in Syria and go for the final assault, which means that they would have effectively cleared the country. That is all being put down to to Russian aggression. And interesting to see in that article that there's a description of this massive Russian naval buildup off the coast of Syria. Well, partly that is part of a declared military operation in the Mediterranean as a whole, which is a large-scale exercise. But of course, if the Americans or indeed if Britain had declared that there was a military exercise happening, that would be all it was, an exercise. Mm. So we're constantly seeing now a Western-style propaganda, which I think leaves even the Soviet regime in the dust. Mm. This is so pervasive. But the Guardian article is just... Well, I'm smiling because I don't really know how to describe it, but it's one attack after another on the Russians. There is no real information. There's no description of the work to clear out terrorists from Syria. It's all those nasty Russians. It is looking particularly dangerous, I think, at the moment.
Mm. Well, you know, Twitter now, we're starting to see, as other areas that have already been cleared of ISIS and al-Nusra Front influence, like Aleppo here on screen, As these areas are starting to be rebuilt, we're starting to see more compare and contrast photographs like this appearing on Twitter with the development work going ahead very well. So it's pleasing to see Syria begin to rebuild itself in areas that have already been cleansed. Idlib is really the only major area left to be dealt with. You know, all I can see is determination by the British government to make sure that the propaganda maintains the idea in people's minds that this is somehow something dictatorial by Assad to want to get rid of terrorists from his own country.
But we're not going to see any of this rebuilding on BBC, for example.
No, indeed. And in the meantime, of course, before we went on holiday, we reported on the Yemeni bus bombing, the Saudi Arabian bombing of the bus of school bus with children on board. Well, the Saudi Arabians, here we are 3 weeks later, have now admitted responsibility for that it was mistakes were made. They said we would like to express our regret over the mistakes, extend our sympathies and solidarity to the victims and the families. I'm sure they appreciate that a lot. And they said that the Joint Forces Command will soon, as soon as the official findings are received, undertake legal proceedings to hold the ones who committed mistakes accountable according to the rules and regulations related to such cases. At the end of the day, though, Brian, the question is, who provided them with the targeting information for this exercise, and where did they get the weapons? Well, CNN says that the weapons came from the State Department, part of a State Department-sanctioned arms deal. But it remains the case, of course, that Britain, a very large-scale supplier of arms and armaments to the Saudi Arabia, which are all being, well, significant numbers are being dropped on Yemeni civilians. The hypocrisy on the British government here is staggering, isn't it? Because Assad is not allowed to clear terrorists out of Idlib, but Saudi is, with our tacit support, allowed to bomb civilians, including children on a school bus.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to propaganda. And here it is, the Mail. Britain deploys 440 more troops to Afghanistan over the real threat of a Manchester-style terror attack being plotted by IS fanatics from the country. So some of this stuff for me is becoming just unreadable. It's so utterly ridiculous. But of course, let's bring in the Minister for War, Gavin Williamson, because he had a lot to say. He's been visiting Afghanistan and he said this on the ground. We're consistently seeing terrorist groups operating here in Afghanistan. Evidence of them links back not just to the United Kingdom, but to the whole of continental Europe. What we see is a real threat posed by these groups to the United Kingdom, and we've got to be acting as we are to ensure that we do not see future Manchester-style attacks. So we're to believe that we've now got intelligence that people in Afghanistan are, well, probably they're going to be bombing those holiday villages in Devon. That's what we were told a few months ago. We should all be scared of that. But these people are very, very clever, and they're able to be living in Afghanistan, plotting what they're going to do in Manchester. He says, this is why we've chosen to act as we have, by increasing the troop numbers here in Afghanistan, because we recognise the fact that we're dealing with groups such as IS, such as Al-Qaeda, which wish to do Britain harm. So I just had to add this, really, that the question is, what are 440 British troops possibly going to achieve in Afghanistan? 34 million population, covering about 252,000 square miles. What are those troops actually going to achieve?
Well, they're going to train the jihadis, which are then going to be sent over to the UK to carry out the Manchester-style bombings, which is going to give the British government the opportunity to implement whatever draconian powers they want to implement.
That would be one scenario. The other scenario is 440 British troops are going to be there, unsure as to why they're there, probably being shot at the same occasion. But of course, yes, you're right, the British Special Forces did much of the training on IED placement, which are now coming back to haunt British military in Afghanistan elsewhere. David, this man, Gavin Williamson, is a very, very dangerous individual. Is he just a puppet, or is he now part of the theatre process as a whole?
Well, there's a great deal of theatre going on, so you're quite right to use that word. Some of the theatre is internal with his own department and ministry, because some of the key offices have been so well crafted for quite some time that he doesn't really see the really true picture of what's going on. So in terms of, you know, the management and mechanics, it's a convenient mess, and who does that suit? In terms of the Afghanistan issue, it really is the same modus operandi of Northern Ireland. So the Mays outfit are being entirely hypocritical here, really, as to what's going on with putting troops in there. It's no different to putting troops into Northern Ireland. What do they expect the Afghanis to do? You know, so we all need to just sort of think back into a recent history, and probably all those Northern Ireland vets need to get activated on this and start joining all the dots up as to really what's going on. But in terms of the propaganda, which is one of the key things that you hit upon, This has been a facet, a directive from within the Cabinet Office since 1948. We've just discovered over the little holiday period that we've had. And the integration process into the EU started in this country in 1948 under four headings. And the source for this is a government nuclear advisor. So I'm going to take it as read that what she's saying is true, because she's saying she's had got the source reference. And that was propaganda and media. So there you go. This is part of that envelope. We've got political and defense and security, and finally economic. And all of that is now in this frame that we're now seeing. I've been busily engaged since 1948, integrating. That's a lovely word that we keep seeing everywhere. I mean, integrate. This is the soft cover word for, you know, European Union, unitary, unify, unification. And that's actually what's going on. But part within that has been a specific directive of media and propaganda.
Right, David, we've actually got some images around those subjects, which we'll just have a little lead into. Let's just pop this one up on, let's just pop this one on screen. So we've got a BBC headline, "At a Glance, the New UK Brexit Plan Agreed at Chequers." I've just embedded there the common rule book about goods, because it says a treaty will be signed committing the UK to continued harmonisation with EU rules. Really, for what I read, this was the theme of the whole plan, that we were going to harmonise with the EU, we were going to continue to work with them, we were going to have discussions about how we could work with them more closely. There wasn't any sign of Brexit within this debate. No discussion about Brexit, certainly no discussion about EU military integration, which is something that you've been warning about. So let's just have a look at some of the information that is available on this. Now, RUSI is an organisation that you've taken a close interest in under the heading that it's better known as EUC rather than RUSI. But basically, we'd got a debate going on here where there was discussion about the fact that, well, if you talked nuclear deterrent for UK, you were really now having to talk about the joint French-British nuclear deterrent. I'm going to lead on to the lady you've mentioned and the Clement Attlee things, but just comment on this one. It's an open secret now that we don't have full control of our nuclear deterrent, but it's being done jointly with the French.
Yes, right. The language at this Brexit conference. I mean, but obviously, you know, David Davis has just said, he's just said openly, you know, that this arrangement that May has is actually more EU and worse than what we had to begin with. This is coming from him. So these guys here at RUSI, so you've got Nick Whitney and Beatrice Hauser, are openly saying joint British, French, EU nuclear deterrent. That it was all done in the same breath and could and should be extended into Europe. So they're openly talking about this. They then say that the Europeans are openly talking about it. So when you understand that the unification process, or unity, union, you know, these are the key words that the campaign has got her anchor off. The opposition are using words like integrate, joint, all right? But what they actually are is unity, union, unification, unify. You know, we get to a single point command and control, and that's of all defence services in the EU zone. They have to do that in order to set a budget to close loop the money, and it's all about the money. Potentially a position, a new position in Europe of over 300 billion euros. That's the ultimate objective. So it's obviously a bureaucratic elephant. It's going to take a long while to get them there. They'll need loads of events and crises in order to wage the political war and the propaganda. But nonetheless, these people at RUSI are openly saying that it is in effect a joint nuclear deterrent. Now, that's really ironic, because before the Brexit debate happened, Parliament voted to renew independent British nuclear deterrent. This needs a real hard look at, because that's, from my understanding of basic language, that is not what is being discussed here at, you know, that what's supposed to be the Premier Government Advisory panel. Mm-hmm. Nick Whitney's pedigree in nuclear special advisor is literally straight into government, and he goes through Sir Michael Quinlan. So, you know, you've got a real serious, you know, can everybody not see this? And we've got joint this word again at nuclear command at Northwood.
David, you hit the button there, which is the fact that if you're going to create this EU military monster, you need crisis, you need wars, you need skirmishes to help pull it together or push it together as soon as possible. So we've got both things now happening. We've got, if you know where to look for it, we've got the rise of an integrated EU military structure. And at the same time, every direction we go, we've got UK and the EU, the USA is there as well, pushing for war. So have a look at this. We've got a couple of circles on screen. They'll be filled in a minute. But this was EU force boasting about its capability and exercises which are being mounted Bosnia-Herzegovina. Let's see what the interest is. Well, here's British forces arriving on the ground, and circled there is the fact that the boss of the British troops has got EU insignia on. Now, I don't remember this being debated in UK at all. If we have a look at one of the squaddies coming off the aircraft, all of these men have got an EU patch on their arm. So we're now not dealing with sovereign British troops. We're now dealing with troops who have been given to the European Union. And if we look for the source of this, this is where you can find quite a lot of the detail, EU4 Mission Althea. If you have a look at what they're up to, it says that EU4 assists Bosnia and Herzegovina in its path towards Euro-Atlantic integration, focusing on the capacity building and training of the armed forces. So this is a huge political objective. This is about building the EU, cross-Atlantic, US military empire. And it's happening on a day-by-day basis right in front of our eyes. You pointed out also this one in a tweet many, many months ago, where the boss of the Royal Marines had actually confirmed that the EU military command and control infrastructure was already installed and operational in UK. How much more information do we need to put in front of the British public to show them that what the Conservative government says at the moment about Brexit is a complete lie? And what is actually happening is that we're being driven increasingly quickly into this unified EU military structure. It's a secret hidden in plain sight.
You're quite correct, Brian. It is absolutely out in plain view now. So you've got all these guys embarking this RAF jet there with the EU insignia on their uniforms. So, you know, we're only 5 minutes away from them being in an EU uniform with an EU blue beret. And they can, you know, have their red paratrooper berets substituted, and you know, the Union Jack and the white ensign will be gone. You know, what's next? P-45 for the Queen? We don't need her anymore. Think how much fun and games Hammond's going to have saving all that money on a constitutional monarch. But, you know, bit Roger Moore tongue in cheek there. But, you know, the essence of this job here is that the EU are openly doing this in front of everyone now. This is this week now. They're on exercise. And that's between the 4th and the 7th of September, and a crucial conference taking place on the 7th of September with Russia. So they're out there in the hotspot. Federica Mogherini has already declared that this region is a hotspot. And what we're really cooking here is that over the last 2 weeks, we've seen a lot of reports coming in from sources out in that part of the world, mobilization of the Western Partnership. And this is indeed the case, that the Sixth Fleet, the American Sixth Fleet, is mobilized. It's gone through Faz Lane. It's now gone out to Italy, and it's now out in the Med doing its job. We're seeing the Russians mobilize. Well, hey, presto, guys, you know, the propaganda that you just mentioned there about the Russians mobilizing, well, actually, you know, the Western Partnership has done that a fortnight ago. And the only gang that this is going to suit is the EU, because it will give them the political levers. If there's a confrontation, it will give them the political levers and the argument to enact EU military union in full. And let me reassure the general public, there are no technical difficulties in doing that. The system to do it is already in place. Senior RN sources have confirmed this to me. It can be done within 6 hours. It will all be go, get on with it. It'll just happen. So, those paratroopers are out there doing as they've been commanded and ordered. And unfortunately, we're going to see a situation where, frankly, I think there's a huge risk at the moment for conflict. And that will only suit the EU.
Right, David, before we move on slightly, let's just bring this one on screen. This is the lady who was giving the talk at UC, if I've got this correct, who started to boast that she'd found the Clement Attlee papers from 1948 that was talking about the Union. And you'd retweeted on this subject saying that this was critical information. The evidence is all there when we know where to look. Dave Barmby, in his excellent book about the EU being a corporatist racket, was also showing evidence in 1973. But this is going back to 1948, papers demonstrating that there was to be an integrated EU military system. Have I got that right?
That's correct.
Okay, well, there we are. We'll try and get more on this in due course, including showing you the video clip where that lady is boasting about those papers. But let's just end the section, as it were, on this one, because we've now got the head of MI5, according to the Times at least, summoning Jeremy Corbyn for a Facts of Life talk on terror. And the inference of this article is that Jeremy Corbyn really doesn't understand what's going on in the world. So he needs to be summoned by MI5 head Andrew Parker to give him what's what. Let's bring in a bit of the information here. So we've got he's summoned for a personal briefing on the terrorist threat to Britain amid questions about his approach to national security. The MI5 boss also wants to prime Corbyn on the extent of hostile Russian espionage activity and the growing threat from far-right extremists. Oh, that's interesting. So we're now broadening this out. But it's good to see at least one member of the public has worked out what's going on here. So, gentlemen, Mark Curtis says, headmaster of the permanent government demands popular naughty schoolboy come to his office to tell him how to behave. Otherwise, he'll be expelled. This is it in a nutshell, isn't it? We have got the deep state, the real government hidden in the shadows or the semi-shadows, now simply telling elected politicians what they have to believe. Otherwise, what? They're going to be blackmailed, intimidated, threatened. It's just remarkable. Britain in 2018 becomes ever more Soviet, while at the same time we're criticising the Russians.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what the case is. The tweet that we captured from Heiko Maas, German government foreign ministry, and it was an official tweet from the German government stating that they wanted genuine and more defence union, a real and genuine and more defence union. These are very, very specific terms here that we've equated more, that it would be an acceleration, and the genuine would have to be in order for it to be defence union and it to fulfil the monetary criteria and the policy criteria of the original policy concept, that it was all defence services would have to be nuclear. And as I've said, this conversation has been taking place within the civil servants on a pan-EU basis for many years now. And what has happened over the last 2 weeks, give or take, in linear with the mobilisation of the actual troops, is that the conversation within governments and civil servants has now gone to the political facade. So the likes of Merkel and Macron are now openly calling for more defence union, and Macron is using some very exquisite language. And I don't doubt that May will do it very soon, but she's got a problem on her hands, because there is at least some resistance now forming within some MPs and some awareness. So we can see how the time frame and the geography and the politics are all overlapping within the same sphere. But that conversation now that was been a secret conversation within the civil servants has now been put to the elected members and is now being put to the public. They're openly calling for military defence union. Now, of course, the general public don't understand really what this is and what it means. So, you know, this is the point when really everybody has got to get behind this and focus on it and try and achieve some sort of yield for the Brexit campaign. Because if we leave it any longer, it will be a fait accompli that military union will actually take place. And that may only be a short frame. It may only be a short time frame. So it's vital that everybody shares this information, tweets it, gets onto their MP. And there are a few MPs out there now that are talking about this. Andrea Jenkins is leading it. She's talking about it. Steve Baker is now talking about it. And there's a few others. You'll find them on Twitter. If you do a quick sift, EU Defence Union, you'll see the MPs that are talking about it. Get on there, offer them some kind of support, whether it be, you know, whatever digital way you can, get onto it and do it. Because unless there's a swell now, it'll not stop. And before long, we're going to be seeing the other end of the conflict come back to us.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you, David.
Now, before we went on holiday, we were talking about the illustrious Andy Price, who works for the Foreign Commonwealth Office, who is head of counter-disinformation. And if you remember, we pointed out the fact that he isn't just head of counter-disinformation. He's head of counter-disinformation and media development. So David was talking about propaganda earlier. And this man has a key role to play, I believe. But of course, we can't actually find out because since April, we've been trying to get the Foreign Commonwealth Office to tell us something about the job that he has to do, his remit, his terms of reference, how many people he has working for him. So in April, a Freedom of Information request went in. That was ignored for 20 days. And then they demanded a further 20 days. And then they denied, on the basis of national security, the information. Now, the Freedom of Information Act says that you can only deny on the basis of national security if, in fact, the security services are involved, so that we've got a reasonable justifications for suggesting that Andy Price, in fact, is a spook. But I put in a request for an internal review of the process of this because they've broken some of the rules. The 20 days for the internal review went past and nothing from them, so I prompted them. And 12 working days later, then I prompted them again, and this time I threatened them with the Information Commissioner. Here is what they sent me back. They said, "I'm writing about your request for an internal review. I'm very sorry for not being able to meet the deadline for the internal review of our handling of FOI 0380-18 and our failure to keep you updated about developments with your case. We have been informed that the original reviewer has been appointed to a new job for operational reasons and will not therefore be able to complete the review. The department responsible is looking for someone to continue the review and provide a response. We try hard to ensure that we respond in a prompt and efficient manner, but I'm afraid on this occasion we will need more time. We will keep you up to date with the progress of the review." So they have moved the person doing the review halfway through the review, but they don't seem to be able to find anybody else to continue the review. And so I have to wait until they decide whether they can find somebody else at some indeterminate time in the future. But they will keep me up to date with the progress of the review. So Andy Price is clearly so secret, despite the fact that he has made comments in the press and has given evidence to various think tanks and other panels. He is so secret that we cannot know what his job is as head of counter-disinformation.
Just give us a recap, Mike, on what you actually asked them in very simple terms.
I wasn't looking for any identifiable information. I was simply asking for some indication as to the size of his team and to their terms of reference. Didn't seem like it was terribly onerous. But I just wanted to know what exactly was this role about? What was this team about? Speaking to people that are ex-Foreign Office and so on, they certainly had no knowledge of any group within the Foreign Office to deal with counter disinformation and media development. And as I say, the first time that we noticed the existence of this team was September 2017, and we don't believe the team existed before that, so we wanted some information about that.
So simple information, but they're running scared.
Absolutely. Now, if you remember going back, I think to May or June time, Matthew Hancock, who was the Secretary of State for Digital Culture, Media and Sport at the time, was very concerned about the state of the mainstream media in the UK. And he was very concerned about disinformation in the UK. And he said the first area, if you remember in the speech, he said the first area I want to look into is accuracy, where we're seeing real threats to our media, our society as a whole, is disinformation, also known as fake news. So he is concerned about threats to the mainstream media, and he is concerned about threats to society as a result of disinformation, also known as fake news. He went on to say, if an individual published online, it would be untouched by media regulation. So we're starting to see clues that the government intends to regulate all kinds of media, not just the commercial corporate media. I tremble at the thought, he said, of a media regulated by the state in a time of malevolent forces in politics. Get this wrong, and I fear for the future of our liberal democracy. And he said, the Cairn Cross Review will explore whether intervention may be required to safeguard the future of our free and independent press. So he was launching the Cairn Cross Review. Well, the Cairn Cross Review is now in place. It's operational, and it's now seeking views on threats to the press. Matthew Hancock expressing some of the perceived threats. And they're saying that for the first time, more people are now reading newspapers online than in print. And this is according to a YouGov poll, which is saying that two-thirds of British people, online adults, regularly access news through the internet. Almost half of those who regularly access news admit they're accessing news in more ways now compared to 5 years ago. This is a threat because, of course, one of the ways that they're accessing the news is via social media. It's also a threat because the mainstream media can't monetize the news that's online in the way that they did when they were in print. So these are threats that they're intending to deal with, the government intending to shore up the mainstream media in some way. Francis Cairncross is away to Brussels today, apparently, because apparently the challenges facing the press are not unique to the UK. And it's vital, in her view, that she listens to the experiences of other countries, and those countries are EU countries. And she says, I look forward to learning more in Brussels about the questions industry and policymakers are grappling with and the solutions they're considering to ensuring the future of a free press is protected. So this is a fact-finding mission. It's part of the review's call for evidence, and it's going to enable Dame Frances Cairncross to explore threats to the sustainability of the news industry, which is a Europe-wide problem. So this is brilliant. I'm looking forward to seeing what the Cairncross Review comes up with. We know that the mainstream media are looking at various funding models, including perhaps building press, you know, news platforms, which would be similar in style to, for example, the Sky satellite or Freeview system, where, you know, various companies have channels on those platforms and they have revenue sharing. They're talking about that for the mainstream press and media, possibly having investigative journalism funded by NGOs and think tanks and, you know, openly funded by these people like Friends of the Earth or Greenpeace. That's guaranteed objective investigative journalism, isn't it?
Probably not. We're not going to see a lot from the BBC. I just happened to pick up on this one. This is the standard of BBC news at the moment. This is important news for the BBC. I've got a very big article on it that Chris Evans is going to leave Radio 2. So this is what the public are being fed by £3.74 billion worth of BBC propaganda machine, whilst all the rest of the analysis we've carried out today is effectively ignored. But this one I found really interesting. Lady McNamara, described as an Australian influencer, dies on a Greek yacht. So she's working on a billionaire's yacht. She's found dead. She's found in a very bad way, tied up in rope. at the back of the ship. The description's pretty vague, but she actually dies on the way to hospital. But I was fascinated that the BBC describes her as an Australian influencer, and I didn't know what that meant. BBC thinks this is a very big article, so they've also been tweeting it out. But what has this lady been doing? Well, she's been working on a billionaire's yacht, and then it says that she regularly posted pictures of her travels on her Instagram account, where she had more than 12,000 followers. Well, what is this to do with influencing?
Well, people with large social media followings are considered influencers, and you can only have the correct type of influencer. So you, with quite a following on Twitter, Brian, would be considered an influencer, but you would be considered a negative influencer as far as government is concerned.
Yeah.
This is a positive influencer because, you know, people that are providing lifestyle influence, choices about what products you might buy. This is the type of positive influence that PR agencies like, that governments like.
Right.
But people that are presenting you know, evidence-based information for people to make up their own minds about things, that would be considered the type of influencer that okay. You would want
so
to shut
down.
So
the BBC reports, because you've got attractive lady has died, that's always death, always a good story for the BBC, but also she was active on social media. Fascinating. Well, this one I just had to drop in because I thought it was brilliant. Apparently that the Novichok case police cars have been dumped in a Cotswold landfill. There's no problem at all in the article. It was actually a Telegraph article originally. There's even a little inset map of where these vehicles have gone. Absolutely no danger to the public at all. We just had to get rid of those vehicles. But if you've public vehicle, the transport wagon, presumably those are still floating around.
Now, fracking, Ian R. Crane pushing this out today. Please complete and retweet this UK government survey on permitted development for fracking. So this is all about taking the decision-making powers for planning permission for fracking development out of the hands of local government and putting it in the hands of central government, or in fact just giving a carte blanche permission for any such development to take place, whether local people like it or not. And so the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government seems to be running a survey on SurveyMonkey to find out what people think about this. Ian feels that it's important that people fill this one in. I think I agree with that. So please get involved. The URL is on screen there if you want to freeze the screen and do that. Now, well, Sajid Javid is busy today because he is saying that there's been, or the Home Office is saying that there's been a 700% increase in the number of referrals to the National Crime Agency for child sexual abuse content on the internet since 2013. So we're going to have to shut all this down. This is extremely dangerous. Today, the Home Secretary is announcing his personal mission to tackle child abuse in all its forms. And what they're saying is that 80,000 paedophiles pose a threat to children online, according to Sajid Javid. He said he's shocked at the scale of this. He is shocked. It's shocking for him because, I mean, he didn't know. He didn't know that it was going on. Well, John Wedger hadn't been talking about this for quite a long time and similar sorts of things. So Sajid Javid, being Home Secretary, absolutely shocked about this. This is what he said. One officer I met who had previously worked in counterterrorism for over 20 years told me how in all his years of working, he's never been so shocked by the scale of the threat or of the determination of the offenders he has as he is in his current job. So he's met an officer. I wonder who that officer is. The officer's unnamed. But John Wedger, who's been trying to blow the whistle on this for quite a number of years, is ignored. But suddenly it's a problem. Now, what could possibly be the reason for that? Well, one is, of course, that they are taking something that they've known about for decades and they're propagandizing it in order to shut down speech on the internet. That's one possibility. Another is this article, which was in the Guardian a couple of days ago, the cash crisis pushing child services to tipping point. So this is kind of like the gift that keeps on giving, because they've got a whole host of different policy points that they can use this to attack. But certainly censorship is going to be one aspect of it. And I am not for one second suggesting that if there are 80,000 British paedophiles creating a threat to children online, that that shouldn't be dealt with. The question is how it gets dealt with. And the issue is, once again, why is this being promoted at this point in time when it's been known, as John Wedger has been trying to make the point, it's been known about for many, many years?
Yep.
Right. We're going to end with this, are we? I think more or less. More carnage. This is potentially good news here, Brian, because the Treasury is in talks with the Bank of England to keep Mark Carney in his job as Governor of the Bank of England, because he's been doing such a spectacular job that we need him for much longer. So we can look forward to more interventions telling us how Britain is going to be destroyed by Brexit. And we can look forward to more, well, more of nothing in terms of sort of regulating the City of London and its activities. So carnage on its way.
Carnage on its way. Canadian carnage,
well,
of course, we
yeah.
I think are allowed to put in there. David Ellis, just very quickly, 20 seconds, any closing remarks you'd like?
Absolutely. In 1972, when we joined this, when Ted Heath took the country into this European economic community under false pretenses. We all know that's a lie now. And in 1974 and 1975, the IMF were brought in under that gambit of the country being broke because we'd hemorrhaged that much money in joining the EU and having all their constraints put upon us. So this is not rocket science for anyone, guys. There is no financial payoff being in this arrangement. This is a surrendering of everything to another state, i.e. we cease to be a country in all forms, militarily, economically, politically. It's as simple as that. There is no financial payoff. So the reason they're hell-bent on keep saying that, oh, well, no, we'll be broke, you know, there's financial consequences, because that's exactly an inversion of what this integration into this thing is doing. And bear in mind, we now know, thanks to the lady at RUSI there, that they've been busily engaged in media and propaganda on this basis from within the Cabinet Office since 1948. Thank you very much.
David, thank you for that excellent summary. Well, that's it. It's good to be back with UK Column News. Thank you, all our viewers and listeners who've joined us today. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.